The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, my name is Adam Fields with the Midnight27Studios.com, creator of the Prowl comic book series. You are listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your podcast purveyor extraordinaire, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 210. Thank you for checking out this episode. I hope all is well with you. I'm doing quite well, and as a matter of fact, I'm pretty darn excited to bring you this new episode, in which my guest is a man that has appeared on the PVD Cast two other times, and I'm talking about Mr. Jack Wallace. He's one of the guys behind Disposable Fiction Comics, and I can't really believe this. I really can't. I even mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation. It's almost been 3 years since Jack has been on the PVD Cast, and I just can't believe that. It just seems like yesterday that he was on talking about the projects that he was doing, but nonetheless, he's back to talk about a new Kickstarter campaign that he has going on for the collected graphic novel known as Frankenstein for Mayor. Now, this is a book that Jack produced, volume 1 and volume 2. Well, now he's taking both of those volumes and putting it together in a 150-page graphic novel. So we're going to talk about the Kickstarter campaign. We're also going to talk about the Columbus Scribbler, which is a newspaper that's produced biannually by Jack, Brian, and Derek from the Drunken Cat Comics, and Steve Steiner. They get some of the best comic book creators here in Columbus to get together, and they put out this free newspaper. And there's a lot of cool comics in there of many different genres, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. As a matter of fact, it got nominated for an Eisner Award. You know, the cream of the crop, man. And so Jack talks about the experience of being nominated. And we're also going to talk about some of his other books, too. I mean, he's got a large catalog, including The Marriage Act, Matter of Perception, Spellbound, and a few others. So it's going to be one fun interview. You definitely want to stick around for it. But before I throw it to a quick break, and then you can hear my conversation with Jack Wallace, I need to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. Folks, they have a new location, 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They moved down the plaza a little bit. It's a bigger store. It's a better store, in my opinion. So you need to stop by and check it out. I mean, they've got all kinds of single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, posters, back issues, various other collectibles. I mean, it's a great store. It's fantastic. I mean, Jeff did a lot of work for the new location. And trust me, you stop by, you'll be amazed. But you know what? You don't even have to leave the house if you want to check things out, because they have a website, wgcomics.com. They even have a Facebook page, facebook.com/wgcomics. But no matter how you interact with the fine folks over there, if you interact with them, let them know that you heard about World's Greatest Comics from me, John Orlando, and the PVD Cast. All right, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, as I said, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Jack Wallace from Disposable Fiction Comics. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me here on this episode of the PVD Cast is Mr. Jack Wallace. Jack, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. I can't believe, as I was doing my research, January of 2017 was the last time you appeared on the PVD Cast.
It had been a while.
But here's the crazy part about it all. Even though, like, it's been that long, we see each other frequently.
We do, yeah.
So it's like...
Well, we're running the same circles. you know what I mean? Like, you're pretty much part of the Indie Comics home at this point, as far as Columbus is concerned.
Oh,
so.
Well, okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're one of us, whether you like it or not. Yeah, you're in it now.
I was going to say, yeah, we usually see each other at various different conventions. And speaking of one, CXC, was just a few... What, about a month or so ago?
Yep.
I did not get the opportunity to make it because, as I mentioned before, I had some adulting to do thanks to the hot water tank in my house and didn't get a chance to make it down there. But how was CXC for you?
Oh, it was really good. We were able to meet up with quite a few people. We distributed a lot of the scribblers that we had printed out. We had just finished... issue number 3, and we had Rafael Rosado as the cover artist, which was great because we had actually met him at the CXC the year before and kind of pitched him on seeing if he would be interested in doing an interview and everything. So, yeah, it turned out really good. There was a lot of – the crowd was really interesting, and it was probably bigger than years past, if I had to say.
Cool.
Traffic was good, and it's always an interesting crowd of people, of comics creators, people who are making new stuff, and people from all over the country that, you know, it was really fascinating.
And you know what? We'll talk about the Columbus Scribbler maybe a little bit later on. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of things that we want to cover here, and maybe for the folks at home that have not heard you on this podcast for your two previous times – you're one of the guys behind Disposable Fiction Comics.
Yep.
So would you like to tell the folks what is Disposable Fiction Comics?
Disposable Fiction Comics has been through a lot of iterations. So we started off as a just kind of a short anthology of short fiction. And from that, it kind of turned into a webcomic where we were posting monthly. Just a new story. Each one was about 5 or 6 pages. They varied genre, and we worked with a new artist for each one. So I think over the span of Disposable Fiction, we probably worked with over about 40 different artists, 40 different creators from all around the world, including, Italy, Bosnia, Chile, quite a few Canadians, quite a few Americans. it was really fun to do that, and we have... Basically, the group is really defined by me and my partner Chris Allen, who's he's out in the UK, out in Scotland, and he's a Welsh artist who's been doing pinups, and he's been doing most of the coloring and lettering for Disposable Fiction for a long time. Me and Chris have partnered together since I would. Gather maybe 2011 or maybe 2014, something like that.
Okay.
So we've been working together for quite some time, which is really crazy, especially because we've never actually met in person or anything. So.
And you know what? I don't know if I've ever asked this. How did you meet Chris?
Chris was one of the first people. So I had two volumes of Disposable Fiction, which was just – so we were just doing short fiction. And he had contacted me and wanted to see if he was interested in doing some lettering for one of our pieces. And he did a great job. And then we started working on a couple different projects together. And then eventually I knew that finding a colorist and a letterer, somebody who can do all those things that I can't do and I'm possibly... I'm very bad at any of that stuff, so I was really happy to have a partner who could handle and do any of the things that I can't do. So he was a perfect match, always great to work with. So we've been together for a while now.
So a little advice for everybody out there. If you want to get into comics, make sure you're a good letterer or colorist. You can write your own fortune, right?
Or just be really good friends with people. Just figure out how to be a nice guy or a nice person and get out there and, you know... schmooze, I guess. Paying people definitely helps.
That's true. and you kind of covered a little bit of this, that, you know, you have over 30 different comics on the website, disposablefictioncomics.com, and, you know, tons of genres from Westerns to comedy to crime to fantasy, and they're all free to check out.
Yep, they're all free to read. The goal was to try and break through as many different genres as we could. Mm-hmm. So we did a We did a book of comedy. We did a book of horror, a book of doomed romance. And yeah, I mean, we did a verses book too, which was a very hard one. It was a book of competition, but it's not really a genre, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one because it seems like the stories that were in there were about people participating in like games of fate or games of chance, which all had that unique theme that I thought, wow, you know what? You don't see that very often.
It's not really a genre, but we're going to make it a genre.
Hey,
we're going to count that one.
That's right, man. That's right. You know, I'll say for the listeners at home, you know, I remember the very first time that we sat down on this podcast, you explained that Disposable Fiction Comics was the perfect comic to read while you're on the bus.
Yep.
And then you could just throw it away if you wanted to. Or recycle it.
You're right. That's kind of how I've been pushing it. It's simply something that you can... I try and think of like those dime store novels, you know, from way back in the day where it's just a cheap read, something that you can kind of get through pretty quickly.
There you go. And as you mentioned, you have for all of the short comics that you have, the short web comics, you have them all in kind of omnibuses, so to speak, versus a versus. You have a criminal case book, Tales of Terror, and a couple disposable fiction collections as well. What kind of feedback do you get from these collections when people pick them up?
I think everybody that I've ever has ever told me about them has enjoyed the various art styles. I mean, they really like the genres and what it is, but it is it does become difficult to sell. So anthologies have that very weird niche of people really enjoy them, but when it comes to selling them, it's like, people like a singular idea, and that makes it much easier to kind of pass off. Whereas if I'm going to buy this thing, I might like half of it. I might like a quarter of it. I don't know. I have no idea because there's so much in there.
Good point. I never thought of it that way. I mean, instead of getting one single contained story of Spider-Man, for an example, and it's all going to be about Spider-Man, you have an anthology where it's Spider-Man and Captain America, and then people go, I don't know if I want to read that.
Right, yeah, okay. Exactly.
So I get you.
You have fans of... So that's kind of what we did with the genres to kind of help that out. If you're a fan of horror, you'll like these four horror stories, you know, that sort of thing.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's talk about a few of your other books as well, including the one that actually has a Kickstarter going on. We'll get to all that in a minute. We will. But let's throw out a couple of these books and just talk about them a little bit. And I know for avid listeners of this podcast, there might be a few overlaps, but you can deal with it. let's start off with the 512th Day of Christmas.
So we did that book with Reynaldo Contreras. He's a Chilean artist that we've worked with for a while. And I had, it's an anti-Christmas book. It's the best way that I can really say it. It was a Christmas book for all the people who were really tired of Christmas. But the general idea of the book is just that Christmas has been going on for about a year and a half. Santa Claus has taken over the world, and now it's up to two young kids that are on the naughty list to help stop Santa. And that's the very gist of it, without giving too much away.
So where'd you come up with the idea for this story?
I don't know. I want to say that it was there's some of those old horror movies where Santa Claus becomes
Silent Night, Deadly Night. That's what I'm thinking.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to go full slasher with Santa Claus, you know. But this idea that Christmas is one of those things, and I'm not trying to deter all the Christmas lovers. I love Christmas too. I do.
Sure.
But I do feel like there is a little bit of, you know, that time where you've heard, you know, Merry Christmas by Mariah Carey for the umpteenth hundred time, where you're just like, all right, I got it. I know it's Christmas.
Wait, see, that doesn't bother me, Jack. What bothers me is what I just saw in the store the other day, that they have freaking Christmas decorations out. I'm like, no, it is still – at this point, it was October 30th.
Right. Yeah,
I'm like, no.
Exactly. No, so. And I agree with that. I think that there is this – I think we have a large – Christmas is one of those things where we love it, but it does feel after a while that it can be kind of pushed down your throat a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
And so I wanted to – kind of promote that idea of being like, you know what, let's just, it's And it's not even really about Christmas anymore, right? You know, it becomes more of this commercialism more than it is about the actual hanging out with the family and enjoying the time. And
right, right.
So that was kind of what the gist of the meaning of what I was going for.
Let's move on to one that's totally different in genre, and that is Spellbound, where mm-hmm. you have two elves that are sent to a town to investigate the murder of two minors. Right. And by minors, we mean people who dig in the ground.
Right,
not,
yeah.
Not underage people.
Right,
yeah. But two dwarf minors. And so was it difficult to blend these two genres of like mystery and detective story with fantasy? Or was it not as hard as I think it would be?
No, I like, have you ever seen Chinatown with Jack Nicholson?
I haven't. Okay.
I wanted to do a crime noir, but stuck in the kind of Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. realm, you know what okay. I mean? And in a world in which there's magic and stuff. And so that's kind of how I went at the premise of it. It was basically just going to be, you know, two, well, they didn't really have detectives because they're dwarves and what have you. So I just, you know, I took the kind of boiled crime noir story that you typically have and I kind of paired it up into this other alter world. On a difficulty level, I don't know if it was difficult, but I you know, when it gets into fantasy, it's like, where do you draw the line? Are there going to be dragons in it? You know, you got to
out where you're going, right. Pair it back. Okay.
We've got to have wizards and maybe a golem and stuff. But mm-hmm, is there going to be, mm-hmm. you know, in magic, then all things are possible. So you got to really weave your needles correctly, I suppose.
I just chuckled at the fact that you asked me about Chinatown because it's been a topic of conversation this past weekend with my cousin. We were talking about Nicholson films because I had never seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yeah.
And so we actually watched it, actually, this weekend, and we were talking about it, and I had said, well, I just heard something on the radio about it was an interview with Robert Evans, who had just passed away not too long ago. You know, multi-billion-dollar mm-hmm. producer that's done Godfather and all those movies. And he was talking about Chinatown, actually, and mm-hmm. about how the ending in the movie caused such a controversy with the guy who actually wrote the book.
Right.
And he was so mad. Still to this day, supposedly, yeah. He's so pissed off about it and whatnot. But that just was so weird. Did you mention Chinatown?
Yeah. it's a point of conversation all the time for me. No, that's not true.
I was going to say, is it one of your favorite movies?
Yeah, I don't actually bring it up in conversation typically, but, you know.
Well, you will from now on.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to drop it every chance I get.
Let's talk about Matter of Perception.
Oh, yeah.
This one, I think, sounds to be probably the most unique out of all of them, if I may. But go ahead and give a quick summary, if you will, of the book.
Yeah, Matter of Perception was the general premise is that there is a priest who gets his hands on a vial of LSD. After nearly losing, he's continually losing his congregation, and in order to get people to get in touch with their religious side, he decides to dose the congregation with LSD through the communion wafers. And so the general idea is that all these people then have this religious experience. They all stop doing whatever evil things that they had been doing in their lives because now they've experienced religion and God and so then it becomes whether the priest has to wrestle with whether it was actually God doing the work or whether it was the drugs. And so that's a general idea of it.
So, if I may,
sure.
Is this a little bit kind of autobiographical to your own religious experiences or no?
No. I've never had any sort of experience like that on drugs, but it was more of,
well, your spiritual take. Is this how, you know, your philosophy on religion or whatnot?
I think it was more just an examination of, when people have this experience, how could you tell the difference? Could you actually know the difference of whether this was a purely religious experience, and who's to say that it wasn't? And you know, if this theory that God works in mysterious ways, perhaps this was one of the ways that He was working through people. And so it's really just more wrestling with that theme.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no,
so much a thesis on your own views on religion.
I mean, it wasn't supposed to be like a religion as the opiate of the masses sort of thing. It was really just more kind of playing with that theme.
Gotcha. So one that I think that we've talked about before, the Marriage Act, where in a distant future here in the United States, everyone must be married by age 30 and ready to procreate. But it's kind of problematic for some of your characters, such as Tom and Annie.
Mm-hmm.
So it was written in 2014. That's when you completed it. Before maybe the current political climate.
Sure.
Because of our political climate today, has it increased sales or decreased sales?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if the people who are typically looking for comics are not usually going for comics of that nature. So I have a weird niche of these bizarre stories that are either uber religious, uber political, but that's kind of been my bag. Those have been.
And you know what? I totally glossed over what is the problem with Tom and Annie. We totally glossed over the main point because people at home are going, so what the hell,
John? Right. Anyways, so the point of the comic is, so they are, you're forced to be in a relationship of someone of the opposite sex by the age of 30 to kind of help reproduce the country. So obviously it's about a character, both a gay man and a bachelorette who aren't really interested in marriage, but they kind of get married to kind of circumvent the law.
Okay.
But of course, Tom's character has to pretend to be straight. And so, doesn't always, his secret gets revealed. And so then it turns into more of then they have to go and try and figure out the best way for them to fight the law.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know what? As a total side note, when you mentioned that about Tom, about playing the role of being a straight man in your comic, it just reminded me of when I watched the VH1 Behind the Music on Judas Priest.
Oh yeah,
did you ever see that one?
I haven't. No, but
where Rob Halford constantly like had to pretend that he was straight. Because, you know, metal fans in the 80s were not very open-minded and accepting. Sure. But I remember when I watched that, I thought, man, that's really got to be horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, seriously, it's got to be the worst thing to have to be, you know.
To have the secret lifestyle that you can never reveal and that you have to. I mean, it's not like we're that far away from it. You know what I mean? We're still. I mean, I don't even remember when Ellen came out, but it wasn't even that long ago.
True.
Before it was only, I want to say 2004, but that's a random number, so I'm not sure if that's right.
My point was
it hasn't been that long since we've had that we've even gotten to be okay with any of this.
Right. Correct. And so, anywho. Getting back to the Marriage Act, again, you said you're not so sure about how the sales have been pre-new administration or post.
People are more into it now. And I did release it for free. It was, you know, we were selling it for a while, but I think right after the Supreme Court had changed its decision, I went and released it for free just because in support of that, I guess.
Sure. Right. You know what? Real quick. You mentioned it yourself. You're kind of into, you know, politics and whatnot.
Sure.
Have you always been into that? Always been into politics, or?
Yeah, I would say I am. I like that material. And I think we as creators have to kind of, you know, we mirror reflections of our society that we're in.
Sure.
And I feel I understand people who don't. I know a lot of creators who kind of bypass that entire thing because it can be divisive. You're automatically maybe not splitting, but you're changing your audience to maybe not a certain segment. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, if you're going to just pass the whole boat on everything that's happening around, I mean, that part of our job is to kind of comment on what we see going on. And so I feel like it's partially our duty to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And or at least play with it, at least talk about it, and maybe not even pick a side, but at least discuss it as an idea.
And I would think too that comic book fans have seen politics always being brought in.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Mean, you know, those that are in the know. You look at all the early Stan Lee and Jack Kirby stuff and all that. That they were all analogies for what was going on.
Exactly. I mean, the X-Men is a perfect example.
Exactly.
Of that.
Exactly. I can remember there's an Avengers storyline, you know, dealing with racism,
right,
and whatnot. So I think it's always been in there. And you know, again, if you can quote unquote educate somebody through comics about things that are going on. And maybe do it in a camouflaged way. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, shit. Okay, that's what that means, you know. Then I think you've done a fantastic service to the world and to society.
Well, and that's the thing that always kind of bothers me when somebody tells me that they're, oh, I don't really like political comics. I'm like, everything that you know, everything that you've loved is a political comic. Maybe you're not recognizing that, but yeah, certainly.
Well, let's talk about more politics with your book, Frankenstein for Mayor.
All right, yeah.
Because it is a fantastic book where Frankenstein is running for mayor versus Dracula.
That's right.
And you've had two volumes of this book, and now you're kind of putting it together in a collection. Is that
That's
correct?
That's right, yep. The graphic novel is complete.
It is complete, and it is up on Kickstarter right now.
That's right.
So you want to tell some of the folks real quickly. What are some of the rewards if you wish to contribute?
Sure.
And I strongly recommend listeners you should. But what's some of the rewards that they get?
Well, the rewards we've gotten are one, the whole book. There's a digital issue, which you know is only $9. So we're trying to do an easy buy-in. It's a 150-page graphic novel too. So we're not talking. I mean, it's a real deal book. The other rewards that we've had, it automatically, if you get a graphic novel, you both get a bumper sticker and a pen. You can choose your team. You can either do Team Frankenstein or Team Dracula, whichever is your flavor. And we have different pens and bumper stickers for both. We have three fantastic pinups from previous Disposable Fiction artists that we've worked with. And we've also... there's also for the really big buy-in, for the $90 thing, we will actually hand draw you into your own pinup. So you can, if you send us a picture, we're going to have Ronaldo. There is a picture of it online. You can see where Dracula is just about to bite your neck, and Frankenstein is sneaking up behind him to just, you know, stop him, I guess.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get this sometimes from some people. They want to know, hey, you know, if I donate this money, where's the money going? So yep. and so I'm just going to throw it out there. What will the money go towards that, you know, you raised through the Kickstarter?
Yeah, the money is purely going to the print of the book. Mm-hmm. So we are pretty much we're printing through Ingram Spark, who we've used before. And so all the funds are going towards that. The book is actually paid for and done and complete. So there's no wait time in between that. So, yeah, it's pretty much just going straight to the print.
Straight there. And what many people don't realize is that that's a large bill.
Yeah.
Printing is a large bill.
Yeah.
You know, for any independent creator, that's probably, you would say, the biggest expense?
No, I would say art first.
And then printing?
Yeah, yeah. Production of the book is probably the most. But then the second one is definitely printing as far as all those things are concerned.
You know, one thing I do want to mention on the Kickstarter page, which, by the way, just go to Kickstarter.com and search for Frankenstein for Mayor. It pops right up. You have a pretty cool video on there. It's a little bit of a teaser.
Thank you.
Who did the voiceover?
This was great. I actually hired a voice actor.
Really?
I did, yes. I went whole hog on this. Chris Lewis Media, check him out. He's on
He's
Facebook.
Local? He's here?
I don't know if he's here. No, I think he's in Kentucky, actually.
Oh, okay.
Think of it.
Okay.
So this is a little bit of a roundabout situation where I have, on a side note, I have been working with Essence Studios. I don't know if you've met Malachi Staples at all.
I have not. I've heard the name thrown around.
Yeah,
here
if you're at enough cons, you'll see him eventually.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I've been working with Essence Studios, writing scripts for them for animation.
Okay.
And I had kind of met, I talked to Malachi about it, who I might be interested in. And I'd put out an ad on voices.com if you are ever doing, even in the realm of it, you definitely need to do this just for fun. just because you, I think I got 50 responses, and each one read this probably paragraph worth of stuff in their own voice. And it was amazing just to go through it and everybody who was really interested in it. And I wanted to hire all of them, of course. I ended up going through to Chris because, one, I had had Malachi's recommendation. And, man, he just did such an amazing job that he was the choice. After okay. I saw what he did, I couldn't have been happier with how it went.
Okay.
And then I based everything else off that. He really did a great job.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Essence. So you're writing scripts for their animation.
Sure.
What do they do? Short cartoons that are posted online, or are they doing like what's their projects involved?
Well, basically the way Essence it's an animation studio, so they have clients who are saying, "I want to make this video for my Instagram page," or "I want to make a video for." I mean, we've done Kickstarter videos. Commercials. I mean, they've done an animation for a couple commercials. So basically what happens is they get on board, somebody gets on board and says, "Hey, I want to make this video out of this thing." And sometimes they have an idea. Most of the time they have some sort of loose idea.
Okay.
And then I kind of take whatever idea they have and then build it into a script that then goes in through an animation process, which I know somewhat about, but I'm not totally versed. I do get to keep up on watching the watching the storyboards get created, watching the animation kind of get added on. And honestly, it's been really, really a lot of fun. And for me, it's great. One, I'm actually getting paid for my work, which is like a first time that that's ever happened. as far as like, somebody actually sure. paying to write scripts. But two, for me, it just also keeps my chops in order. It keeps me writing and keeps me having to create and giving a deadline and all those other things that you need as a creator to do that. So I've really, really lucked out and they've been great.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Jack Wallace for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book collectibles, basically anything you need for your fandom, they've got. And if you want to make sure you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pool system and you'll even get 20% off pre-ordered comics. Folks, that's a heck of a deal. So check them out online at wgcomics.com or head on over to the store at its new location, which is, of course, 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And don't forget, you can even find them on Facebook. Just look for WG Comics in the search engine of Facebook. And no matter how you visit the store, whether it's online or in person, make sure you let them know that you heard about it from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast.
Well, let's talk about the Columbus Scribbler. And for those that don't know, here in Columbus, you, Derek Baxter, Brian Canini, mm-hmm. and Steve Steiner are the four guys behind this project. So you want to describe what the project is?
Yeah, the Columbus Scribbler. So it's the four of us. We have, the way I think of it is kind of, the way I was thinking about it was like, if you ever had like a bunch of local bands, like how would you promote all the bands, and so what you would do would be is that you would be like, "Oh, well, let's all make a mixtape together," and kind
good
of.
Good analogy. Yeah. I like that. That's a good analogy.
So that was kind of the general premise of it is that we are all comic book creators. We are in a town that is full of amazing talent and you've been there. You've seen all the shows where sometimes it's like you're in this town that has this amazing pool of talent. And sometimes it feels like nobody really knows that much about it.
That is absolutely correct. I say that not just in comics, but in film, yeah. in podcasting, in there's music. There's so much talent sitting here in Columbus
yeah.
that gets ignored sometimes, right. just to be blunt. About it. And yeah, no, I've had that thought many, many times.
Yeah. And it's really sad because it feels like the comics community has kind of gotten slept on. Of course, with Jeff Smith and doing the CXC and we are kind of Columbus is being more focused as a comics town or a mm-hmm. comic city. But our goal was really just to get anybody and everybody. And the main reason that people aren't comics fans is they haven't read the right comic for them yet. So there's no, you know, comics kind of gets this idea of being guys in underwear that punch each other, but there's so much out there that we really want. We want everybody to become a fan of it, and we want more people to be involved in it and to create their own comics. And so that's kind of what it's about, is us kind of being a bridge to that comics community to the general public. So our goal is to get as comics in as many faces as we can.
And it's printed like a newspaper.
It is, yeah.
And it's available at various different locations
right
throughout the city.
Yep. So it's a free newspaper. We're at about 27 different locations. Mostly you can if you go to pretty much any library, we're going to be in there. We are at a lot of pretty much all the comic shops and various other businesses throughout. So, I want to say we've kind of built a little bit of a distribution network that seems to continue to grow. So we're adding more businesses like Yellow Brick Pizza, and at the same time, we're also doing it by ourselves. So there's no distribution network.
When you said distribution network, I was gonna say, wait a minute, you mean the four of you guys?
Yeah, right. By distribution network, I mean us driving in our cars with a whole bunch of papers and being like, hey, can we put these papers out? They're free, and they're like, yeah, that's fine.
But I love that distribution.
Yeah,
that's
we're working on it. Yeah,
there you go. But you know, in all seriousness, the Columbus Scribbler got nominated for an Eisner Award. Mm-hmm. And maybe for the folks that are listening at home, how does that happen? Because, you know, that the Eisner Award for many comic book fans is, you know, the top tier of recognition and whatnot. But how does that actually happen? How does the process work to be nominated for the Eisner?
So I didn't know that we were nominated. I didn't have anything. So Brian Canini, who is, you've had on your show before.
Sure, yeah. From Talking Cat Comics.
Yeah, that's right. He actually, regularly submits stuff to the Eisners. And, this just happened to be part of his pile that he happened to submit this time. And lo and behold, I didn't know that we had been submitted. And then we found out, like, oh shit, we're nominated in the top four. So then it just came out that we were nominated and that we were in the final four. So we got to go to San Diego and we got to see the Eisners live in person. And that was, for anybody who does comics, it's the Mecca. It's the top, the highest tier that you could possibly get. And I was a nervous wreck, I gotta say, the entire time. I wanted to just kind of enjoy it. But man, if you ever done something where it's like it means so much and you're so nervous that it's just you're like, oh, really hope it goes well. Just no matter what happens. I just wanna get out alive and I hope it's, you know.
Definitely I can imagine that it was maybe a tad bit stressful, but yet also very joyful.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing experience. And of course, you know, crashed it 2 days out. So you're only on a plane, you get to kind of enjoy it. We all have jobs and we can only take off so much time. So it was like, all right, well, let's get on a plane. We're there on Thursday. We kind of killed it on Friday and Saturday and it's right back home. So yeah, it was really, really a lot of fun.
Cool. When's the next Columbus Scribbler come out?
Well, we're hoping to be out by March. Is when the fourth issue is going to be coming out. So right now, if any other creators are listening, we are accepting submissions up until the end of January, and then hopefully we'll be out by March. Right now we're on a biannual schedule, so we're trying to keep it. Right now we're doing about two issues a year. Mm-hmm. Eventually, as time goes by, we would like to increase that, but that's where we're at now.
And at one time you were putting them out when we had our big, you know, space, mm-hmm. you know, we'd drop one for space and then drop one for CXC.
Right.
But that schedule's kind of been a little bit helter-skelter now.
Right.
For those that don't know, there's some changes coming up to some of the schedules for some of those cons,
sure.
Space in particular. So now you're just going to focus on maybe trying to get one out in the spring and one in the fall.
Yeah, again. Right. So, yeah, I think that's kind of what we're going to go for now. Right now we're going to work on that and hopefully as things improve we'll continue to put out more.
Gotcha. So let's just wrap up with a couple of other miscellaneous things.
Sure.
Miscellaneous questions. If you were going to tell anybody that's getting into this biz some advice, what would that be?
Just that it's not going to go exactly the way that you planned.
Do you have an example of that?
I feel like anybody who, especially writers, we all have this grandiose idea that, oh, well, we're going to make this thing and people are just going to, we're going to make this comic. Yeah. Crazy. And the publishers are going to be knocking down our door. And, I will say that it is worthwhile doing, and okay. Regardless of how much time and money you spend, there really is absolutely nothing like sitting on your couch with a printed thing in your hand that you have completed, that you've spent your money and time to do, and now it's finished and you get to hold it, and then you get to sell it to somebody and like look at their face and, and watch somebody else read it. I can't tell you the joy I've had like having people, you know, I've had kids who've come up to my table and like just peruse through them. They're not going to buy it, but to watch them laugh or to get a joke, killer. Love it. I mean, that's so worth it. So to be able to do that, and it is worth it. And the only way that you're ever going to actually get into comics is by just making comics. I feel like that's a universal creator.
Yeah. Yeah. No one, if your goal is to make it to the big two.
Sure.
Yeah. Got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know, cause the big two, unless you're some Hollywood bigwig, they're right. Not going to pick up the phone and go, yeah. Here, we'll call Jack in Columbus. Right. Yeah, exactly. Unless you've done some stuff, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. You at least, and you've at least got to get out there and put your best foot forward and at least try. I mean, that's what, and at least then you'll know whether you liked it or not. Right. Yeah, that's you might end up hating it, but you at least have to give it a shot.
So, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot for the last question. What's the best compliment you've received from somebody that purchased one of your books or read one of your books?
Ooh, my goodness. That is a tough question. You know, I don't have a great answer for it, though, unfortunately. The best thing that I think that I've been told, I think, was just that there needed to be more comics like this, you okay. know, and okay. I think that was from somebody who had read a matter of perception, that it was one of those things that regardless of how weird and what they thought about it, they felt that it was challenging and cool and something that had really stuck with them for a while.
Excellent. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really nice.
That's cool. All right, let's real quickly, as we're starting to wrap up here, some of the websites where folks can check out your stuff, DisposableFictionComics.com, which I mentioned earlier,
yep.
And Columbus Scribbler, which I think you mentioned, you know, if you are a writer or an artist and you want to submit stuff, you can do it right through that website, correct?
Yep, that's right. You can, if you go to the submissions tab, you can check it out. You can also read all three issues for free. They're all downloadable on the site.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. They're all loaded up there in a PDF. So if you want to thumb through them and check them out,
yeah,
please do so, including... Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, doesn't issue 2 have a very interesting article and picture of Bob Corby in it?
Oh, it does. Yeah. Yeah. Bob Corby is the main centerpiece. He's our interviewee on issue number 2.
We gave him a lot of flack on that one. Oh, I think during SpaceTime. Yeah. Maybe wasn't the best photo.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bob. I don't know, but. Anyways.
We work with what we got.
Hey, all joking aside, Bob is great.
Bob fantastic is amazing. Man. Bob is one of those pinnacles of the Columbus comics thing. He has done so much for our community.
Yes, he has.
And the fact that he's still doing it, you know, space is 21 years. And
yeah, this summer will be 21 years.
So,
you know, you get people, you know, again, we'll go back to what we started this conversation. You know, we're talking about conventions. People from all around come to space, you know, from the Midwest and Canada and all around the West Coast. There's been people from there. I mean, all around to come out and just see what people are doing and to present what they have there. And you know, it's a great, great con.
It provides us an outlet, you know, for us, for real, for people to actually get out there and try and sell their wares. That's amazing.
Exactly. Where can folks find you on Twitter?
At DF Comic, no S. That's somebody else. I found that out. and you can also check out Disposable Fiction Comics on Facebook as well. And if you Google, just Google Frankenstein for Mayor, you're going to find the Kickstarter.
And right now you're what, 66% funded?
We were at 709 or out of 900. So we're getting very close.
Cool.
I know.
Really excited. And it's the 22nd of November, right? When the campaign ends. So folks, definitely get out the wallet.
Yeah.
Work down some Check cash. It out.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to love it.
Yeah, exactly. Also, too, by the way, real quick, Facebook for Columbus Scribbler is at CBUS Scribbler, by the way, for the you folks that want to follow on Facebook. And Jack, any closing words?
John, I got to say again, thank you for having us, having me and for doing what you do for Columbus Comics.
Dude, thank you very much. I think, you know what? That's the nicest compliment I've gotten in a while. I appreciate it.
Happy to do that.
Anyways, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Jack Wallace. I hope you enjoyed it. I always have a blast talking to Jack. As I said, even though it's been almost 3 years since he's been on this podcast, we run into each other quite frequently throughout a calendar year. So it's always cool to see Jack. It's always cool to find out what he's got going on. And hey, man, if you're out about in town, if you live here in Columbus, Ohio, look for the Columbus Scribbler, you know, especially March when it pops up. Grab a copy and let everybody know about it, too. It's really a great and very unique thing to this city. So I hope that Derek, Brian, Steve, Jack, and everybody involved continues to knock it out of the park when it comes to the Columbus Scribbler. And don't forget, you can still donate to Jack's Kickstarter for the next few weeks, help him reach his goals and get Frankenstein for Mayor as one giant graphic novel. Giant. I make it sound like it's 800 pages. And get it in 150-page graphic novel. There you go. That's a little more detailed. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I need to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you'd like to do so. You could shoot me an email. My email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page, that of course being facebook.com/pvdcast. Or you can find me on Twitter, and my personal Twitter account is @pvdmvp. And don't forget that if you are listening to this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. You know, the more you give, more feedback you give, the better off this podcast is. And I really do appreciate it. Tell everybody that you can find it a variety of different places, including pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, but it's also available through iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, the Echo Network, Pod Paradise, SoundCloud, you know, basically all the big podcast platforms. Real quickly, want to thank Audible as well for being a sponsor of this episode. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/pvdcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And once again, if you want to get your hands on a free audiobook download, just go to audibletrial.com/pvdcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/pvdcast. All right, well, that being said, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.